Here we are for another edition of Writers Roundtable, the forum where we discuss some of the burning issues in sports. Today, we look back at the recently concluded Cricket West Indies Regional Four-Day Championship, and we look ahead to the upcoming series between West Indies and Sri Lanka. I'm your host, Hayden Gill, joined at the roundtable by Philip Spooner, Jonte Coppin, and Sean Green. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, first we look at the regional four-day competition. And even before we get on the field, gentlemen, the format. A format which, seen for the first time, instead of the typical round-robin arrangement that we've seen with teams playing one another for eons, we saw a series where it was reduced primarily because of financial constraints, as Cricket West Indies put it, and we had three bilateral series. So two teams playing each other for three matches leading up to a final. Something that was, as you said, seen for the first time. But I don't know, on the surface of it, gentlemen, what do you make of it? Starting with you, Philip.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks for having me. You said we've seen it for the first time, and let's hope we've seen it for the last time. It's not good. It didn't work, and we hope that they can find the finances to get back to a proper regional season. This is the era of the more cricket you play, the better. The players want to play more. The audience wants to see more, and the cricket system in the West Indies deserves more. We played in Leeds Mungo cricket even before the revamp. We were playing the Leeds Mungo cricket in the world, and now we are playing even less. And it's a tragedy. I think it's an absolute tragedy. And so we have to scrap that and come. We got to come better. Cricket West Indies has to do better, has to get more cricket for the players and prepare the players better for the next step, which is international cricket. There is a massive gulf, we already know, between the level of world cricket and international cricket. And to play less, to play the same people over and over and over again, became quite monotonous, actually, by the time we got to the third round. It felt a little bit meaningless. You don't tell that to Kevin Wickham, because he filled his boots, but the format, I give it 3 out of 10. Luckily, there were some good matches. And even within the reduced structure, you still had a terrible situation of a match having to be abandoned because of a poor pitch. Now, you've got less days, less intensity, less of a product, and then you kick yourself in the guts by having that situation. I think it was bad. And in the 130-odd years of history of West Indies first-class cricket, I think this must go down as one of the least attractive that we've ever had.
Okay. John, if you don't give it 3 out of 10, what's your score?
Start your day with the Nation News ePaper. Enjoy the accessibility and new upgrades of the Nation News ePaper daily, whether on our mobile app or Nation News website. For added convenience, use our new audio read feature, which reads the newspaper aloud, or look in the archives for any publications you may have missed. Get your news, your time, your way with the Nation News ePaper and enjoy our new upgrades.
Similar or less than that, actually. It was completely pointless. I felt bad for Philip for having to cover it, actually, because there was nothing to be gained from it. The fact that you were playing the same teams all the time meant that your stats could even be used to push you for a West Indies call-up. For example, Kevin Wickham, despite the fact he played beautifully against Jamaica, he came up against Trinidad, didn't get any runs, and then people say, oh, he didn't score against Jaden Seale, so does it count? So I feel like you didn't help the players at all. You didn't do anything for the system. I completely agree with Philip, actually. And I hope that if the finances don't change and they have to do a revamp, they'll find something else. I would prefer them just to take the players on the A tour and play someone else overseas or something. Just to be a bit more creative with your finances. If this is the best you can do, don't do this.
Yes, Sean?
Yeah, I don't think there's much I can add to what Jante and Philip said. I too would score it probably a 3. And I think evidence of that is in the turnout or the lack of turnout. I mean, even prior to that, the turnout for regional cricket were always very poor. But I think they were even poorer this time around. For pretty much the same reason. I would just be repeating what the other guy said.
Okay. All right, so you all have given it a failing grade, but at the end of the tournament, I mean, did it achieve any purpose whatsoever? Did it any benefits, any positives?
Well, Trinidad won a title for the first time in 20 years, so they've gone home with $200,000 and they're very happy. Yeah. So that's an achievement. You've won the Leewicks Trophy, and you're rich. So power to Trinidad.
Agreed.
But I mean, the players will, the stats, some better than stats. Some have pushed their cause for a recall to Test cricket in the case of Joshua De Silva. Anderson Phillips was exceptional. I really thought he, as much as Jaden Seal bowled better, right? Don't get me wrong, Jaden Seal bowled better. I thought the persevering nature and the absolute desire and the lion-heartedness that Anderson Phillips showed, I think I would rate him as a player of the season. He sort of, I mean, I remember Seals missed a match because of workload management, and Phillips is still there banging.
Yeah.
So for me, he was the player who got the most out of the season. Right, the silver second, because make a double 100 as a great keeper, first wicket keeper from Trinidad in history. He has scored by wicket keeper from Trinidad in history.
Yeah.
You know, he set a lot more, and then obviously Kevin Wickham with his back-to-back centuries for Barbados. He's my third man of the season. So those are the three. Morty will always get wickets. He's bowls on and on and on and on. He gets a credible mention. And then my next player with a credible mention would be Joshua Bishop from Barbados. I mean, batting at number 9 and making 99 not out, nearly taking Barbados over the line. I thought that he was one of the two stand-up players in Barbados. So those are my top five.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Terence Hines from Trinidad, dear books as well. He also showed something back age 34, a journeyman, you know, doing what he's paid to do. Wickham, even though they've been around for a little bit, they announced themselves as real candidates at this level. So, I mean, not all is lost. There's still some of the players, as I said, if all was lost, we would have given them not all the 10. But I gave it 3. Miles and miles and miles, no pun intended, for improvement. It wasn't a shallow season altogether, but there's still a lot way to go. I mean, we are really way off the pace of the quote unquote big teams in Test cricket, which we are supposed to be one of. We are one of the founding members of Test cricket back in the day. I mean, 100 years of Test cricket,
mm-hmm.
i.e. 130 years of first class cricket. We are a big team in world cricket, and to have our season look like this is not good. If you contrast that with India playing 70, BCCI is hosting 1,700 matches in the next season. 1,700 matches in the next Indian season across all aspects of the game. We hosting about 35.
So, you don't see any positives?
It would be hard to name any other positives other than the ones you mentioned. For me, I think it was... I felt especially bad for the players who lost, like Jamaica, Ben Wordley, because that was your season done, pretty much, you know what I mean? And what else do you do now as a cricketer? If you're trying to make it, there is no progression for you. So for me, he gave it a 3, I would give it a 2 or a 1. It was bad. It was just bad.
Your thoughts, Sean?
Apart from the names that Philip mentioned, because I didn't watch all of the other games. I watched all the Barbados games. I thought Marquino Minley bowled pretty well. I think he was probably the best bowler on the show, along with Joshua Bishop. So I think he put him a name for himself. John Campbell kept his play in the West Indies team by the centuries that he scored. I saw Kirk McKenzie putting up his hand. Mind you, I thought those pitches, though, were quite flat. So I have to... have to mention that. I'm just sorry that apart from Kevin Wickham, more of our Barbadian players didn't really put up their hand. I think Craig Brathwaite had just had one really, really good innings, but John Campbell had like, what, three good innings?
Yeah.
And I think there are a few other openers around the region who also did fairly well. I think Cooper from Trinidad and so on. But yes, I would mention John Campbell and Minley.
Now, this storm is really meant to prepare players enough for the higher level, for Test cricket, huh? Given what we've seen with the reduction of matches, then for as long as we know, the top players are more often not available for various reasons.
Yeah.
Question is this regional tournament really serving the purpose for which it was intended in trying to prepare players for the higher level?
When you say that you're talking about the 2026 edition, or you're talking about regional cricket?
Not necessarily this edition, but
more broadly.
The tournament generally first, the regional first class championship.
No, as Philip mentioned, there's a big gap between between what we do and then what we see at test level. Even, I mean, I'm hoping that the same, let's use Anderson Phillip, for example. He had a really good season. I'm hoping that this is an improvement, but this is not the first time that Anderson Phillip had a good season. But then you take it to test level and it's a totally different ball game, a totally different ball game out there. I would say the same thing for the batsman as well. So my short answer is no. It is, I don't think it is doing what it's supposed to do, but we have to work with what we have.
Jonte?
Again, this is boring, but I agree with you. Everyone says that their first class system is not, does not compare to international cricket. Australia say, England say. So it's not like we are unique in that regard. Our problem is our first class system is particularly poor, particularly poorer than theirs. And given our standing in cricket, we're near the bottom in most things, if not everything. It just makes it harder to catch up because our players aren't improving. They aren't playing enough cricket. They aren't playing against good enough opposition to improve. So then you kind of end up in a cycle where your bad players continue to play against players who aren't good enough, who then shine against players they're better than, but then play against better players and then look bad. So I don't know how you get out of that cycle. So the short answer is no, it doesn't serve its purpose. But I don't actually know how you fix that. Because the teams are the teams, and the best players are currently playing for Barbados, Jamaica, Trinidad, Guyana, whoever. So I don't know how you fix it.
How you fix it, Philip?
Well, you prayer. You prayer to the Lord that he can find you an answer. Or David Copperfield is his speeder. David Copperfield, the magician, that he can probably come up with an answer for you. But on a more serious note, if these players are on full-time contracts, paid monthly, paid well monthly, they have to work harder. They have to demonstrate more hard work in the build-up to cricket, in their preparation. They have to be asked. If what you're getting from them now based on their retainer contracts is not enough, you have to work, ask them to work harder. You have to get more out of them for what you're giving. Now, you've given these guys 12-month contracts to play cricket for 3 weeks. That don't make no sense, right? So you ask them to work harder. You ask them to put in more work. If they're giving you 4 hours a day, you've got to ask them to give you six. You got to see the benefit of the money that you're putting in and the work that they're doing. The other thing that I think is a major contributor to our decline, pitches. Yeah. I don't think any of our pitches, bar St. Lucia perhaps, and sometimes you get some sporting pitches in Barbados. You saw last year against Trinidad, we called for a sporting pitch and it turned it. It backfired, it was too sporting. You saw in Antigua they tried a thing and it created some discussion, but in the end we live with it.
Okay, we can discuss it here. So in Antigua we had a situation where the second round match abandoned on the third day because after Jermaine we got struck tennis ball bounce. Then in the final, just about a month later, fourth ball of the game, part of the pitch flying. Yeah. Should that sort of thing really be
happening? It should not be happening. It should not be happening. The preparation has to be in the hands of cricket West. It's your product, it's your tournament, it's your marquee event. You have to make sure that your pitches are right. The sporting pitch, I didn't mind a sporting pitch in earlier rounds, but I think for a final, you need something pretty flat, that you get good scores and it looks like a competitive effort. Probably back ahead of ball, but enough to give the bowlers, some good bowlers, something to work with. The final pitch was a bit too sporting, but it led to a competitive, tight gripping final, which you don't mind. But you'd rather something a little bit less. Now, if you get in a test match, you could ask for that in a test match against Sri Lanka, for example, because your strength now in the test cricket, your bowling, we have five good international fast bowlers. Jalen Seals, Shamar Joseph, Alzari Joseph, Anderson Phillip has shown that he can be in business, and Jason Holder if you pick him, right? So you've got five bowlers, and the Kemar Roach is injured right now, so I don't expect him to feature, but if you put Kemar Roach in the equation, you've got six good bowlers at international quality. So if we get a sporting pitch in test match against Sri Lanka in Antigua, that could be to our advantage. I don't think Sri Lanka's seen bowling as good as ours. But I maintain at regional level, first class cricket, our pitches are not good enough. You had a situation in Jamaica where Barbados were going to make 700 because they could. It was so flat, so benign, the game was so meaningless that the target was, can we break the all-time record? I mean, when you reach the point that that is what you're playing for, we got problems.
John, based on what happened in Antigua, I mean, should head to Rock?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because once again, you go on social media and West Indies cricket is being advertised to the world, is in the international media for the wrong reasons. We're always in the media, we're always in the international media for our financial difficulties. We're essentially begging for money. Please help us, please fund our cricket. And then you have a wicket like that where from ball one, people were saying, well, this isn't fit for cricket. This isn't good enough. We should probably abandon play. And it continued till someone got injured. We're actually lucky that he was okay, because mm-hmm. if he wasn't, that would have been a serious indictment on Cricket West Indies, the groundsman, and everyone else. So absolutely, people should lose their jobs, for sure.
Your thoughts, Sean?
In listening to you talk, it reminded me of that pitch we had, I think, England toured here in, was it 98?
98, in Jamaica.
Yeah. It reminded me of that. And again, bad press for West Indies as a region. And these things should not be happening in 2026. You know, when we have access to all of this technology and so on, these things shouldn't be happening. Embarrassing.
Okay, let's look ahead now to some international cricket. You have a series against Sri Lanka coming up. But even before we get to that series, again, a little bit of controversy before the series with the itinerary that was initially rolled out. Here we are, Barbados, Kensington Oval, regarded as the Mecca of cricket in the Caribbean, being bypassed initially for a season that has four tests, 8 1-day internationals, and 3 2020 internationals with three teams. Again, Cricket West Indies reducing the venues, just using the three venues for three teams, again, because of the financial challenges. Your thoughts on that?
Well, mm-hmm. I'm of the view that the season, dollars versus cents.
Yep.
And
nice job, but isn't
it? Yeah, I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean that. So how much money do you have and what sense it makes? And I think I wasn't completely against the fact that certain teams were in a certain location, because you don't have a lot of money and you want to maximize the opportunity to think. So the six games in Jamaica worked, right? They worked. The two tests in Antigua, I would have been one in Antigua, one in a venue probably close, for example, St. Kitts, right? But that's neither here nor there. Trinidad, again, the two with Pakistan, you've got two good international venues, fine. Then you've got six with New Zealand. I thought that could have been, as it ended up being, Guyana and Barbados, or Guyana and somewhere else, right? So that could have worked. Eventually, two governments came together and decided that this is what they want. I don't know if it's part of the Trident Arrow initiative, but so you've now got some matches in Barbados, and that's fine. But so the governments have now taken on the financial responsibility. So that's what the governments do, and that's the discussions that you want to have, you want to see. So I think that that's progress. But if you don't have a lot of money, New Zealand do it that way. New Zealand travel by land and you play matches that are close. And in the case, when you're in England, most teams play a Lord's Oval, go up to Birmingham, further up north to Leeds and Manchester, right? So you do it in that way, and it works. I mean, they have a lot more money than we do. So, I mean, you don't have the money, you got to play cricket or anything. And the other thing with this year is that they will make no money. These are three teams that are not attractive for broadcasters. I don't know how they're going to sell the TV rights in Sri Lanka and in New Zealand, for example. I mean, who's going to buy it? And you're competing, and it's a competing, I mean, literally competing with the Football World Cup. So everybody that carries cricket in these countries also carries football. New Zealand in the World Cup, football. So who's going to watch cricket? I mean, let's be realistic. Who's going to watch cricket coming from the Caribbean when they can watch the World Cup coming from US, Mexico, and Canada? So the issue of TV rights, they're going to hit a brick wall, right? So normally, make it make sense. And I'm not against, totally, I should say, against the itinerary. But the challenge then, it looked lopsided with Antigua having, I think, 50-something, 50-plus match days. That kind of looked a little bit strange.
Just to make a wrap myself, I think I might have said three venues for the entire international season. Actually, four venues. So we have Jamaica, Antigua, Trinidad, Guyana. Mm-hmm. Initially, like January.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. Barbados being added there. Jonte, back in 27, or heavily 27, 2007 World Cup,
mm-hmm.
you know, many countries spend significant sums of money in developing their facilities, getting their infrastructure up to scratch.
Right.
Having made that tremendous investment, should countries be of the expectation that they would automatically host international cricket every year?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you're going to spend that much on infrastructure, you have to get something out of it. I think the problem is that when they built these infrastructure, built these stadiums, they probably didn't think about it being multi-purpose and about hosting other things other than cricket. So that in times where you don't host cricket, you are still making money from the venues. And we've seen that become quite popular in other sports where, like, you get football stadiums that can host concerts and whatever just to kind of get revenue in. I think they should be expecting to host cricket. If they're Antigua, St. Kitts, wherever, you should be expecting cricket. And I wasn't against Barbados not hosting any cricket because I know that when England come, they're going to come to Barbados. And that's always the juicy tour. So I wasn't upset with Barbados being left out. But I do think Cricket West Indies and the governments need to be on the same hymn sheet in terms of how we distribute these matches, who's getting what games. He mentioned TV rights, which is a big, big part of it. But it always looks as if we're having to scramble to get ourselves in order. And I would like us to be more organized with how we go about things.
Yeah, Sean, your thoughts on your
scheduling? I was just wondering how many, coming up what Jonte said, how many of these other Caribbean international venues host other events apart from cricket? Mm-hmm. And I feel like, no, they know, and like crop over.
Queen's Park hosts a lot. They had air supply the other day. If anybody knows who they are. Yeah. Australian group of men.
You're revealing your age.
Yeah. The agency with Brailara Academy was hosting a lot of concerts till new prime minister. She said no more soccer concerts at Brailara. So that sort of put a spin in that. Guyana has the Global Super League. So
yeah.
They have some cricket after New Zealand leave. So that made coming to Barbados a little bit even easier. When the two governments got together and decided, you know, how they're going to package the New Zealand series. So all's well that ends well. I'm happy that there's cricket at Kensington.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for the people in Barbados who follow cricket so diligently and so purposefully that there is some cricket at Kensington. And I think everybody in the region, by and large, reach a middle ground where they say, okay, Kensington is the Mecca, is the number one sporting arena in the entire region. I mean, there's no other sporting facility in the region that comes close. So I think that was a win-win for everybody. I'm sure Cricket West Indies has approved the governments of Barbados and Guyana to manage the operation costs for the New Zealand series. So, well done.
Okay, let's look ahead to the series against Sri Lanka. I mean, a squad in training in Antigua. What do you make of the group of players put together for that series?
Well, the IPL players are IPL. No Aki Hussein, no Rutherford, no Shepherd, no Sapuran. no Hemmer, no Holder, no Jafar. Well, let's be serious. Yeah, I mean, it's a good group, led by Shea Hope. Shea Hope is you know, he's a top quality white ball cricketer. I mean, he makes so much runs at averaging 50 while keeping wicket. There's never been another West Indian who achieved that. I think the only player who's ever achieved that in history is Dhoni, to average 50 and keep wicket in ODI cricket. So that is phenomenal. Well led by Shea Hope. But we gotta win. If we don't win, we're in big trouble because automatic qualification for the next World Cup is non-negotiable. I mean, if we don't qualify automatically, we got to look at ourselves in the mirror and say, but where are we going with this? Because 2023, we didn't make it at all. 2018, we squeeze in,
mm-hmm.
you know, thanks to an umpire. 2023, we didn't make it. And then the women didn't make it. Neither, you know.
That's
so we're in pretty bad shape. So they have to beat Sri Lanka. Then they have to beat New Zealand. And while beating them, make sure that they look around their shoulders and see what's going on. But if Bangladesh continue winning and creep up on England, we still struggling because we are 10th, but behind by 10 points. So people get the impression that we are 10th, but up, as they say in Barbados, up alongside England and Bangladesh. We are not. We are quite far behind. So yeah, we got to win. We got to keep winning, winning, winning. And then we go to India in October, which is near impossible to win. Right? So we got to go to India too and win. We have a work cut out, honestly. Cheer Hope has to get dread, has to get really serious in that dressing room and say, fellas, we ain't got a choice. You know, we got to win here. We got to make it to this World Cup.
Do you see the West Indies winning the series down there? No,
I do not. I do not. Because so much of it is dependent on Cheer Hope. Cheer Hope is a magnificent cricketer. He's supremely, supremely talented. He is one of the best one-day batsmen in the world and of all time, really. But a lot of the run scoring is going to be down to him. Can he get big scores for West Indies? Because when he fails, West Indies tend to lose. Because we don't make enough runs. And without, you mentioned the IPL players, Rutherford, without Hetmyer, with all these kind of guys that do support, Rutherford's been a big bonus to the 11 in recent times. If he's not going to be there, you're not going to have Jason Holder's experience. You're counting on men who haven't quite delivered in crunch moments. That's what this is. This is crunch moment stuff. And I'm not sure they're going to deliver. So I do expect them to get beat, sadly. I just do.
You share similar views, Sean?
I would try to be a bit more hopeful and say, hope we can win. But even, I remember the days when any home series in the West Indies, we were guaranteed to win. But that's a long time ago. That just doesn't happen anymore. Because of what's happening now, I used to be a fan of IPL cricket. Mm-hmm. I'm not an IPL fan anymore for the sort of thing that's happening now. Okay. As you guys were saying, Cheer Hope is the linchpin. Once Cheer Hope fails, the others will struggle. I think our strength going in is probably our bowling, just like in Test cricket. It's good to see Alzari Joseph back. But again, the batting is where I'm most concerned. I want to put my neck out there and say that I believe we can win. I'm hoping we can win.
Yeah. I think we can win. I think we can beat Sri Lanka in one day. Sri Lanka is a bit of a transition.
They don't tour well.
Sri Lanka did that we failed to do in 50-over cricket is position themselves so they don't have the pressure that we now face. Because you remember the last qualifiers, it was Sri Lanka that qualified. We were Sri Lanka and West Indies were the bigger teams
in that bottom section.
Mm-hmm. Right? Sri Lanka did what I'm doing quite long. And now Sri Lanka are fifth in the ODI standing, taking care of business. Darren Sammy at the time back then said, we got to reconfigure our 50-over cricket and come back stronger. We haven't, because we're still in the doghouse. Yeah. But I believe we can beat Sri Lanka in the Caribbean, in Jamaica. Right? Yeah. I think we can win. I expect us to win the Test series.
Yeah, I expect
us to win the Test series. Even though we are 4 points and at the bottom of the World Test Championship, playing our team with our bowling and Jason Holder batting at 6 or 7, along with the pitches that I expect to see in Antigua, I believe we can beat Sri Lanka in the Caribbean. And I expect us to beat them, and I'd be disappointed if we didn't win the 2-match Test series.
Yeah, I believe the Test cricket, yes. I believe in Test cricket because I do think there'll be some sportsier pitches. I do think that we will. They don't travel very well, Sri Lanka. And I do think we'll beat them in the Test. I was concerned more with one-day cricket because I just don't think we have the batting capable of doing it. But in Test cricket, I'm more confident, even though West Indies are not a good Test side either. But I do believe they'll win the Test series.
Final word with you, Sean.
I'm thinking about the captaincy of the Test team. What I'm going to throw a spanner in the works. What would happen if we don't win the Test series in terms of the captaincy? Would we? I know you're the one who should be asking these questions. But guys, would you...
He's got to go.
Is he a passenger right now?
Yes.
I mean, I think the record has shown... T20 is fine, ODI is fine, but our captain, I think he has been a passenger for quite a while. He's been a captain for what? Roughly a year, I would say. Record, nothing much to speak about. But even with him as a passenger, I still agree that we can win the Test series. I think we have the batting pedigree to do it. You spoke about our bowling. Our bowling is fantastic. I think in the one-day series, to wrap up for me, who we have to look out for from Sri Lanka would be Hasaranga. I think he possibly the bowling, well, the other bowlers too, but we know his record in wicket ball cricket. And with the a lot of the stars missing for the start of the ODI series, I think he's someone that we need to really watch.
But one point there, I expect Chase Ogunjimi as captain. I can't see how you can, at this stage, having not announced it, not made it known, you change it. And then you're changing it to who?
To who?
Right? Because Warwick Khan is highly unlikely, because you're going to play an attack based on pace.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Chase would be my spinner. I'm not going to pick a specialist out and out spinner. I'm not picking one. I am stacking my team with batsmen, bowling all-rounders and fast bowlers. Chase is my slow bowler, right? So and obviously he's the captain, and I'm going at Sri Lanka really hard. I'm going to bowl, pepper them with short balls in them first 30 overs and ask a lot of questions of their batsmen, especially when they toss and bowl first. So I expect Chase to continue. He had a tough year last year, baptism of fire. Australia doesn't get any harder than that. You go to India, it doesn't get any harder than that. And then down to New Zealand, may God help you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So he had a rough year. He should have an easier year opponents-wise in Test cricket this year. Sri Lanka at home, aggressive, ultra-aggressive at them. Pakistan at home, give it to them. And then you go to Bangladesh later in the year where you carry your truckload of spinners and fight with toothpicks or whatever you do. You try to take him off. So he's expected to have an easier year opponent's wise. If he doesn't get the job done this year, questions will obviously have to be asked. But I am backing Chase to continue as captain with the expectation that he has his bowling attack at full strength. Take for example, the way we bowled against Australia last year.
Yeah.
We bowled that way against Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka cannot make 250 runs. And we should therefore beat them, right? If that's going to be the case, we wait and see. But our bowling attack is strong. Chase deserves the opportunity to lead against supposedly weak opposition and therefore expected to it.
Okay, John, here's the final word of view. You can also weigh in on the captaincy.
On the captaincy. I agree with Philip in terms of he had a very difficult first year. My reason for wanting to remove him as captain is purely because he's not contributing with bat or ball and the team are losing. And I know it is a very difficult year, but I said that on the premise that if he does lose against Sri Lanka and Pakistan, then he's got to go. He simply has to.
But then,
I know the problem is always who next.
Yeah.
But you pick your best 11, you pick a captain from there, I think. And if West Indies were to go down that path and lose those games, I'm not sure he would have performed in them. Therefore, I'm not sure he would have been needed in the 11. So that was my premise for it. But you can't take it off him purely because he lost to Australia, because who doesn't, especially as a West Indies captain. But,
Okay, gentlemen, we've had another interesting discussion. Thanks for your input, Philip Spooner, Jonte Coppin, and Sean Green. We also want to hear from you, the viewers. Feel free to share your thoughts in the comment section. Until next time, I am Hayden Gill, signing off from the Writers' Roundtable.